Welcome to the Health Flow Podcast. I'm your host, Jean Armand. Join me weekly as I share health information that will educate and inspire you. Please consider supporting this podcast by listening, subscribing, sharing, and rating. Once again, welcome to the Health Flow Podcast. Welcome to episode number 39 of the Health Flow Podcast. I'm so blessed to have my friend, certified nurse anesthetist, Miss Marcia Wright. We go back for many, many years, and I'm so blessed to have her here as my guest to just talk about health, her experience with COVID, and we hope you enjoy. So Marcia, welcome to the Health Flow Podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. It's long overdue. So tell us about what you do.
Well, I'm a nurse. I am a nurse anesthetist. I do anesthesia. Most of the time when you have surgery and the person performing the anesthesia is probably a nurse anesthetist, just like myself. Okay. So we put you to sleep and pray to the good Lord that you wake up.
No, you do all the right things. You know what exactly what to give to put them under and bring them back
in. Exactly.
Yes. So I wanted you to share your experience about COVID. How has it changed your day-to-day life, work, personally and professionally?
So personally, I can say it's very difficult when you know so much and you always reading and you always keeping up to date on the latest health issues and try to tell your family and they're thinking that you're doing too much. You're taking this way out of proportion. It's not as bad as they say. You know, I have a 22-year-old daughter who came from Louisiana and she goes to school there. And when she came home, she wanted to go visit all her friends, you know, it was like business as usual with her. And I told her that each time you step out of this house to visit someone that's not your family, you set the clock back 2 weeks, meaning that your 2 weeks of isolation starts again. And the problem with that is that your dad and I are not like the healthiest people as far as having no comorbidities. So every time you step out there and you don't wear a mask and you don't wear a glove or you don't use your hand sanitizer, you're within not, 6 feet apart from somebody, you're introducing something to us. And, you know, she really didn't get it until she had to do a research paper. She chose that as a topic, and then she realized the graveness of the disease. Mm-hmm. And the disparity of the disease among African Americans. And that's when she took it seriously, right. You know. It wasn't, thank God it wasn't too late. Knock on wood, none of us have been sick. But up until recently, my interaction with COVID patients was, you know they were positive, so you knew what to do. It's the person that you don't know is positive. That's scary.
Right.
You know, but the thing is, Jean, you know about this. In the 1990s, we lived through the AIDS epidemic. We were on the front line.
Yes.
And we are the ones who were putting these patients in body bags and taking them down to the morgue. And so we know about, you know, the disparity in African Americans. We didn't even know anything much about AIDS. We just did what we had to do.
Right.
At that time, we were young and we did not know our mortality. So, so we just worked. Mm-hmm. You know, we just worked and we did what we had to do. The sad part about COVID and HIV is kind of like the same exact thing as to who they put in the front lines, and that's the minorities.
Yeah,
you know, it's the black.
It's funny that you say that because that's what I've been saying. This is just like the HIV epidemic when it first started in the 90s.
Right.
I mean, we didn't know what we were dealing with. We just took the necessary precautions.
Right.
And we were young. We were
very young.
So it was like, mm-hmm. okay, we just do what they say. But yeah, right. I really look at it, look at this, except the reach is broader with COVID.
Right, definitely, definitely. This now, someone can't stand on the, excuse me, on the sidelines and say, well, it's a gay disease or it's a drug abuser disease. No. Oh, it's because they have hemophilia while they got it. No, right. It's not. It's a disease that, you know, it is touching every single person. You know, our freedom is gone. The way we live life is no longer going to be. And if you try to go back to business as normal, it's not like a hurricane where you say we will rebuild. No, this is health. And without health, you have nothing.
Right.
So when people are like, oh, when things get back to normal, that's the worst thing you can say. No, you should say when things are more under control. Never will it ever go back to normal. Right. It will never. Even with a vaccine, no matter what it is, it's something that you're going to always have in the back of your mind that we can't move about the cabin freely anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. And in my practice, you learn your role as a nurse because, one second, you know your role as a nurse because what they did was they told us as nurse anesthetists that because we are so highly skilled and they're no longer doing elective cases, we're going to have to work in the units as right. So I said to them that, you know, you can't just take someone who's not been in the unit for 20 years and put them back. That's number one. Number two is, as professionals, you ask us what we can do for you. You don't tell us what to do.
Right.
But so if I have to deal with a COVID patient in the OR, so be it. But to tell me that you're taking me out of the OR because you don't want to do it yourself, it reminds me back of when AIDS came out, when all the African-American nurses and the Caribbean nurses, all of us, we were there just working. And everyone else stood outside in a white lab coat with a clipboard. Yeah. And we got our assignments, and 9 out of 10, if you have 5 patients, 3 of them had AIDS or end-stage AIDS, and they were yours.
Yeah.
Everybody else had the diabetes, you know, or the, you know, something else that had nothing to do with AIDS. But we as African-Americans always had the patient who had the sickness. So, you know, they try to do that again to us here in the hospital where I work. And I said, absolutely not. Mm-hmm. I will take care of that patient if I'm in the, you know, if they come to me in the OR, if they were having some kind of lung surgery or something like that, mm-hmm. then I'm right there because that's my patient.
Right.
You know, and that's you know,
an area of comfort and right. expertise. And we want to know that we're given the best and most accurate care.
Right.
Just taking someone and just throwing, it's like saying an internal medicine doctor should now go and take out appendix. You don't right. do that. You just don't do that.
And this is why you have to know your self-worth, because what they did was, they started to dangle money in front of people. And that's what they did. They dangle money in front of you. So if you were making $3,000 a week, now they dangle $10,000 a week. And if you think about it, who you know is going to not want to take their chances with as a nurse?
Yeah.
You know, especially if you've lived through the HIV epidemic. But chances are when HIV epidemic was out, you were healthy, you were younger, you had no comorbidity, so you will be fine, you know.
Yeah.
But now you're older, you probably are diabetic, you're probably hypertensive, you're probably overweight. So I really think about that a lot. Like the vulnerable is who they dangle the money in front of, and that's who ran with it and took it and never came back home, especially in the New York hospitals.
Mm. You know. Gotcha.
Yeah. And now, like, I go to get tested on, I'll let you know what it is. I go to get tested on Tuesday. I'm going to get tested because the patient that I took care of, didn't neglected to tell us that two of her friends that she hung out with, you know, constantly tested positive and is sick with COVID. She neglected to tell us that she also went to get tested. If she told us that two friends were sick and she got tested, we would never have taken her in to have sedation for her back. So now, you know, we have to, all of us in the center have to be tested, because everyone, especially anesthesia, and we all work very, we were less than 6 feet apart. Even right. though I had on the N95 mask and my gloves, you know, there's still a very low chance. So you still have to be careful and, you know, just right. go find out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, that's a good point you bring up, because people aren't, we just recently this week had that same situation, trying to clear someone for surgery. Now, last week, my department here in Georgia, the hospital I work in, we started doing elective. And as of tomorrow, we're full blast.
Right.
What we're doing is everyone gets tested for COVID before surgery. Everyone. Mm-hmm. Period. And this one patient neglected to tell us that he was COVID positive 2 weeks ago. Yes, we tested him and it came back positive. And when we test him, of course you had all your, you know, everything that you should have on.
Right.
Now we're wearing masks for every patient interaction, but like, why not? You're coming for help. Why would you try to hurt? I feel like you're not telling the truth. You could hurt the people who are trying to help you.
That's right. And that's the problem that I have with this lady. I mean, whoever this patient is, because that's another thing, no one will tell us who she is. And I guess at this point, it doesn't really matter, but you just want to look back in your mind and say, was I close to her? You know, things like that. But at this point, it doesn't even matter. But at least what mattered was to be truthful, you know, to be truthful. And she was less than truthful.
And you know, when you come into the medical realm, you expect truth and honesty from your medical providers, and we expect the same from you as a patient.
Exactly. And this is why I absolutely listen. I once had a patient who you know, I asked her, actually, yeah, I said, did you have anything to eat or drink this morning? It's very important that you do not eat prior to surgery, because, you know, there's so many things, but the worst one is when you vomit during surgery and it goes to your lungs. You know, there's a high mortality rate with that.
Yes.
And she said to me, no, she had nothing to eat or drink. I said, okay. I said, because, you know, and I said, okay, I did all my interview. And I said, okay, I just want to look and see how easy it is to put you to sleep. So open your mouth, stick out your tongue. She opened her mouth and there was food particles in her teeth. And I said, you didn't brush your teeth this morning because you thought that, you know, whatever. She says, why? I said, well, there's food particles in your teeth. And she turned red. And I said, let me explain something to you. I said, as long as I document that I ask you whether or not you ate anything, I'm cleared of any wrongdoing. As long as you tell me that you don't have reflux or gastric paresis, I do my induction. I put you to sleep the same way I would do everybody. So I said, but if you were to vomit, aspirate, and it goes to your lungs, and you end up on a ventilator, chances are, because you're a smoker, you probably won't even come off. You probably be trached, meaning we do a tracheostomy, mm-hmm. and you probably be on that for a while, and then you end up in a nursing home, and you know, that's the sequel. I said, that's it, you know, but it's up to you, you know, whatever. I can only go by what you tell me, because truthfulness is what we go by. And then finally she says to me, well, I told you I didn't eat. Well, funny thing about her telling me she didn't eat, I did not do her anesthesia. I document everything. I document the food in her teeth. I you know, I had a witness and everything like that. And then somebody came and relieved me for lunch. The anesthesiologist said, I'll start the case. I said to him, I said, I would still do rapid sequence on her because I think she ate and she's lying. you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, okay, I guess, him, you know, he says, okay. So as soon as they started the induction and put her to sleep, she did. She vomited. And there was a lot of food. A lot. So,
yes.
Yeah, so they canceled her surgery, woke her up, and, you know, woke her up, canceled her surgery, and brought her back to the waiting room. And, you know, from that moment on, this, the there's a thing where, you know, as a surgeon, as a doctor, you can fire your patient. You know that.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, yeah. So, you know, so they wrote up this big, long thing, and they actually fired her as a patient. But, I she's a prime example where I always say, I don't believe anything a patient tells me at all. Right. I have to, you know, I have to see, you know, I just take it, I just write it down, but doesn't mean I believe you.
Right. Right.
And she's a prime example.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
We need everyone to be truthful about everything that you're asked. And,
right.
Medical people aren't really, I know you're not, I'm not, we're not trying to lie or misconstrue anything. And we're asking these things because it's for your well-being.
That's right.
Safety to get through these procedures.
Because remember, I always tell the patients, I said, you need me and I need you. I need you to so that I could be paid. You need me so that you can get better. So it's a symbiotic relationship, so to speak. So if I ask you something, it's not because I'm trying to cancel your procedure. Mm-hmm. I just want to do it safely. And the thing with COVID is that the problem with COVID is that people think now it's starting to believe that it's a stigma.
Mm.
And so just like HIV and stuff like that, that's why they're being less than truthful, because they're believing it's a stigma. And it's not a stigma. It really isn't. It's just, you know, we just need to know so we can you're doing an injustice to even the people that's, you know, in the lobby, in the waiting room. You're just doing so many things that is just not right.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
One good point that you brought up, and I hadn't really think, you know, I haven't put too much thought about this, but there's a lot of people in healthcare, the older generation, which, you know, we're almost getting part of to be that area.
I know.
I hadn't thought about it until you said it. Many of us may have comorbidities. And if we're the ones on the front line, those are the people who COVID affect so badly.
Exactly. Exactly.
So, you know, it's rough. That's right. You know, you see all these people that died, like every time I've seen young people in healthcare. I think there was a white gentleman, very young, that passed away in New York. And in the back of my mind, I just kept on saying, okay, so what kind of medical problems does he have that we don't know?
And so here's what happens to us. You know, it's kind of like when my dad was sick and a friend of mine called us to check on, see, because she hadn't heard from me in a while. And she says to me, I said, oh yeah, my father is pretty sick. He's got stage 4 lung cancer. And then she says to me, yeah, because he smoked, right? And I said, yeah, he did. He quit for a while now. She says, yeah, but that's what happened with smokers. Mm-hmm. I said to her, you know, I've learned, you know, over the years that we should not punish someone or make ourselves feel better by what somebody has done before to create the problem they're having now.
Right.
You know, so him being a smoker does not make me feel better.
It doesn't. That he,
right. So it's the same with the COVID. Mm-hmm. It's like somebody's like, oh yeah, that's because they had high blood pressure. That's because they were old.
Yeah.
If you look at
the pain of
it, doesn't.
No.
Exactly. And if you look, we are, when I see like older people dying from COVID, you know, the 70s and the 80s and the 90-year-old. People don't understand what an impact, what we're losing. We're losing national treasures every day because those elderly people have so many information, so many sources of how things were and what happened during certain times.
Right.
And we're losing all of that. And people don't understand each grandparent you lose is a national treasure that we're losing.
You're so right. I have two friends that've lost, both of them have lost their fathers. And right now I have close family members that are fighting for their lives, husband and wife.
You see what I'm...
COVID.
That's right. Now,
like experiencing that whole thing. So yeah, it's hard. It doesn't matter who gets it. And especially if they pass away from it, the pain is still so very real. It doesn't, like you said, it doesn't dampen it because they're getting it because they had something. That none of that really matters.
It doesn't matter.
It's the effect that it has on the family as a whole. And like you said, losing people with experiences. Sometimes it's only as we get older, we treasure, we realize the knowledge that our parents and grandparents have gained.
Exactly.
You know, during the time that they were telling us all this stuff, it's almost like it works in retrospect. And then you get older, you get more experience, and you're thinking, oh, wow, so mom was right. Dad was right.
Exactly. It's like, you know, it's so funny. My husband, he came outside. He was like, he power washed the pool deck. And he looked at the mango trees. Now, I have a whole bunch of mango trees in my yard because if we ate a mango and it tasted good, we planted the seed. So there's one in particular that's at the side of the house.
I need to come and visit.
I wish you know, it's so funny. But, you know, the mangoes that we planted, only last year we got a good crop. This year, nothing. And my mom was like, oh, it's a leap year. It's going to be good. I'm thinking, in a leap year, you get, you get a lot of crops. So anyway,
well, look at it this way. No one's visiting you this year, so it's good that you don't have a lot.
No, I usually ship them, though. People ask me, and I'll ship mangoes to them.
Oh, wow.
But the funny thing is that the leaves on the tree, all these mango leaves are dropping off, and new leaves are coming up. Mm-hmm. But this is a natural occurrence. You know, this is natural for this to happen. Right. What happened in Italy, where all these old people just dying at one time is not a natural occurrence. Yeah. You know, you know what I'm saying? It's supposed to be something that happened over time, not just happened because
once.
Exactly. So, you know, even though they say, you know, when leaves change, a new one come, when somebody die, a baby born, or whatever, it's still not the way this disease is making it not happen over time. It's just people, even, you know, people are just dying. You know?
Yeah.
You know.
It's very difficult in our time to wrap our minds around 60 plus thousand people dying.
Right.
In such a short period of time. You're talking about from March to May.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's in the U.S. And that's only in the U.S.
That's only in the U.S. And I know we're used to death, but this is something completely different. It takes 9 months for a baby to develop and be born. There's not enough kids replacing, you know, the ones that are dying now.
And I'm not a conspiracy theories person.
I am not that either. I am not.
And, you know, but I look, I look at what's going on, and and I say to myself, I just hope my African American brothers and sisters open their eyes, because they made us believe, somebody put out this narrative that Black people don't get the disease because no one in Africa got it or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's not that no one in Africa was getting the disease. It's just that it wasn't being reported.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Okay. And then, excuse me, then you...
In these areas anyway, in Caribbean areas and in third world countries, they don't have sophisticated autopsies and some tracking death. You know, you can't, that's just nonsense.
When someone dies in Jamaica and they die from a gunshot wound or they die from something, the funniest part about that is you might have to wait 3 to 6 months to bury your loved one because the person who's the pathologist is not on the island.
Yeah.
You gotta wait till he comes back to do the postmortem study on your loved one before you can even bury them. That's how crazy Jamaica is.
And I think Jamaica only has one, right?
It's only one country. It's only one.
Yeah.
But yeah, so you know, so to say that African Americans, blacks, whatever, it's not getting it. Yes, we are. We're getting this disease left, right, and center, and we're not surviving it. And if we do, it's by the grace of God.
Yeah.
You know, because they send you home. They're sending like a lot of them home, and they're dying at home.
Yeah.
You know?
Because you, and in general, I mean, in all fairness, you can't keep everyone in the hospital. But we're right. All humans. You're trying to keep the ones that appear to be at risk. But the disease changes its course so rapidly.
Yeah.
That you may die at home. You know, you just may die at home. So what advice do you have for our people, for everybody listening, my listeners? What advice do you have?
I say, you know, we all have to pretend like we're scrub techs. When you wear your gloves, you got to know what you're touching. You got to live like you're Hindu. Use your right hand for everything dirty and your left hand you keep clean. If you do that, you should be okay. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. If you ever notice how most Indians live, they use one hand to eat and the other one to wash and clean themselves. If we were to do that, I think we would be okay. Mm-hmm. I also do believe in a lot of our old folks' medicine. I believe in the garlic. I believe in the ginger. I believe in the turmeric. Mm-hmm. I believe in the leaf of life. I believe in the fever grass. And that's what I drink twice a day.
Right.
You know, I do believe in the old school medicine, you know, and, you know, and I just know that we're fighting an invisible enemy and we just have to stay, you know, focused and just whatever you feel that's going to work for you, as for if you ever end up with a disease, do it. But you got to have that mentality that it's going to work. Yeah. You have to. Because if you feel like, oh, I'm going to do this, but I know it's not going to work, then it's not going to work.
Right.
You know, that's how I feel about it.
Yeah.
You know.
It's the power of positive thinking.
Right. Because I have a cousin in England, one of my best friends, we went to grad school. I met her in grad school and we've been friends ever since. She went to a woman's conference in March and with her hairdresser. Her hairdresser in Philly is very world renowned. So her hairdresser and her have been close for years. So she went in to support her. And she said, you know, she felt she had this dry cough and everything like that. Then her daughter started to cough and her 95-year-old mom or 90-something year, almost 100-year-old mom starts to cough. Mm. And she's like, they drove to the spot where they're supposed to go. All three of them tested positive for COVID. They lived through it, you know?
All of them?
All of them. By the grace of God, they lived through it. So, and you know what? I believe the reason why they lived through it, because one, God, two, they know they were going to live through it. You see what I'm saying? You've got to have that positive thinking that whatever happens, you're going to get through it. It looks bad now, but you will get through it.
Right.
You know, and my friends always laugh at me, Jean, because I always set my life with 6 months, meaning that today what bothers you 6 months from now, you wish that's what was bothering you now, because it's not as bad as what is happening then.
That's a good, you know, point.
Exactly. So it's that 6 months rule. You know, 6 months from now, this might be just like how SARS just disappear. Right. This might just disappear again.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I think for me that's how I'm feeling, because we've been through so many things. I want us to take all the precautions, the good hand washing, the cleanliness, the mask, your home remedies, getting proper rest, exercise, just sunshine, taking care of yourself, all the things we know we are to do.
Right.
However, I don't want people to become so consumed with this, because when you're so consumed and stressed, that breaks down your immune system again.
So exactly.
You have to have positive thoughts. You have to have positive practices. Yes, this is consuming. Yes, there's a lot that we don't know. Yes, we can't believe everything everyone says. To me, I'm really upset at all the different theories out there.
Right.
Especially, you have to use common sense, and when it's based on things that people are just like making it up as they go. Not every resource is a good resource.
That's right.
So believe that we're going to get through this. Have faith, you know, and stay motivated.
And you know what else this taught me? It's like, this taught me that I am my brother's keeper. Because when SARS was happening in Singapore, and when this was happening in China, everyone sat back and said, oh, wow.
It's happening.
You know, and change the channel. You know? It's kind of like...
It's the truth.
It's kind of like when you sit there and you watch, you know, when I, listen, when I moved here, they had fires. We had, our backyard was on fire. It was Mother's Day weekend. Someone was walking around setting random fires in Palm Bay. And almost all of Palm Bay was on fire, you know. And then I was like, oh my God, send help. People, do they know what's going on with us? And, you know, this is crazy. And, you know, we packed up and, you know, we moved to my parents' house, more inner Palm Bay, and we started getting scared because what if the fires, because then all of a sudden, all the ways to get out of the Brevard County was on fire. Major highways were on fire. So you couldn't leave. And here we are like sitting ducks. We went more central. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, oh my God. And then one day I was sitting down and I was watching California being on fire. And for the first time, I felt.
You understood.
I understood.
You understood. I understood.
Exactly.
Let me tell you, I was on the airplane flying over where I was in Northern California. I had to drive to Medford, Oregon, which was like a 3-hour drive, to take an airplane to get, I was going to Cabo last October. And that was the first time when I was in that plane looking down at the dry flatlands or in just really hills.
Right, right.
I said, I understand why they have these fires. There's nothing but dryness.
Right, right.
I finally understood. So I know what you're saying.
Exactly.
That experience you had made you sympathetic towards someone else because you've been there before. And we can sympathize with people all across the world right now because we're all in the same boat.
We're all in the same boat.
This COVID.
This disease, you know, has humbled a lot of people because before, when you watch people, they just went about their business. You know what I mean? They got in there, you know, they got off the LIR and gone to their homes in Connecticut or in, you know, or Long Island, and you know, they go to the city to work and then go back to their mansion in Connecticut, Long Island, all those places, and not even think back as to what.
Yes.
What they did was they brought whatever disease they got in the city, they brought it to their their little, you know, secluded, you know, comforted spot. And they didn't know they were doing this. Because if this is happening in the city, oh no, it's not going to happen in Connecticut. It's not going to happen in Long Island. You know, but guess what? It's everywhere. You can't hide from this disease. Yeah. You just cannot.
Yeah.
You know, so that tells me a lot, you know, about certain things, you know. Yeah. But it's a learning experience. It's something that, you know, you at least, you know, you could tell your my daughters could tell their grandkids about, you know, and stuff like that, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yes. Oh, my goodness. Thank you. This was amazing.
You're welcome, honey.
This
you're welcome.
This was really good. I just, you know, I hope everyone take heed and I hope this was helpful to them.
Yes, my love. So you have a wonderful afternoon. I'm going back to have my second glass of wine because no work for me tomorrow.
Okay. That's a blessing. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you for listening to the Health Flow Podcast. Your support is much appreciated. It is my goal to share health information that you find helpful. Email topics of interest to thehealthflow@gmail.com. Follow me on Instagram at TheHealthFlow, also on Facebook at The Health Flow. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and share. Until next time, keep your health flowing.